them face to face. Understanding that this was the best Eberly was willing to do for him, Urbain said, "Very well, if you think so. But it must be done quickly. I'll get them together this afternoon. Tomorrow morning at the latest." "Today," Urbain urged. "It must be done today. If it's humanly possible." Standing uncertainly before Eberly's desk, Urbain could think of nothing more to say. He turned and headed for the door.
As Eberly watched the scientist, he thought, "He wants a favor. All right, but he'll have to give me a favor in return. How can I use this situation to my benefit?" The answer came to him before Urbain reached the door. "By the way, Dr. Urbain," he called, "are you planning to run against me in the elections coming up?" Urbain stopped and turned back toward him, brows knitted. "Run in another election? No. Impossible. I have far too much work to do." Eberly nodded. "Then I'll have to figure out some other way for you to pay me back for helping you," he said to himself.
They looked like two little porcelain dolls, Holly thought, as she sat behind her desk. Sitting before her, Hideki and Tomiko Mishima looked tiny, almost delicate, dressed in identical tunics of dark blue with lighter slacks. They also looked, not worried, but terribly concerned and determined.
"Mr. Eberly promised us, when he held the post you now have," said Mrs. Mishima, in a voice so soft it was almost a whisper.
"Chief of Human Resources," her husband added.
"I remember your conversation with him," said Holly, "at least the last part of it."
"Yes, you were there," Tomiko said.
"Nearly 2 years ago, right here in this office," Mishima nodded for emphasis.
The office had been Eberly's when Habitat Goddard began its long flight to Saturn. Once Holly had become Chief of Human Resources, she had brightened the aesthetically bare walls with holoviews of flowers and reproductions of famous paintings. The smart wall behind her displayed a real-time view of Saturn, its glittering rings framing her head neatly.
"We have waited long enough," Mishima said. "We want to bring our baby into the world."
"We want our child," said Tomiko.
She was a technician in the electrical maintenance section, Holly knew from a quick scan of their dossiers. He was a chef for the cafeteria. Both from California, they had voluntarily joined the Saturn mission to get married because neither of their families approved of their union. The ultimate elopement, Holly thought, jumping all the way out to Saturn to get out from under their families. Now they're bumping up against the protocols of the habitat and trying to fight their way through our rules. Holly tried to make a pleasant, placating smile for them as she mentally reviewed their case. Tomiko Mishima had become pregnant almost as soon as Goddard had left the Earth-Moon system, despite the agreement about zero population growth that all the habitat's personnel had signed. The habitat's protocols called for terminating the pregnancy, but Eberly had allowed them to cryonically freeze the fetus in the expectation of thawing it one day and bringing the baby to term. One day is now, Holly realized. Malcolm's little bird has come to roost on my shoulders.
"Mr. and Mrs. Mishima," she heard herself saying gently, "you understand that we're still under the ZPG protocol."
"But Mr. Eberly said once we had established the new government, such restrictions would be removed," said Mishima.
"Reviewed," Holly corrected, "not necessarily removed."
Mishima's face settled into a scowl. "That was not our understanding."
"The habitat is so large," said his wife. "Much of it is empty. There are entire villages that are unoccupied by anyone at all. Surely there is room for a few children now we are firmly established in our final orbit?"
"There should be," Holly agreed, "but we have to proceed carefully."
"I want my baby," Tomiko said firmly.
"You can't keep the fetus frozen indefinitely," Mishima said. "Cryonic preservation isn't perpetual. There are long-term risks."
"I know," said Holly. "I'm a reborn myself." Their eyes widened, and they both sucked in air. I understand how you feel, Holly went on. I truly do. And I'll do my best to help you. Once they left her office, practically bowing as they backed to the door, Holly understood that it really was time to take up this entire ZPG protocol. With something of a shock, she realized that someday she'd want to have a baby herself.
5 January 2096, afternoon. Urbane stared unhappily at Eberle and his three department heads sitting across the small conference table from him, one very young-looking woman, two nondescript men. Except for Eberle, he knew none of them. Both the men had golden complexions, almost yellow, even though they were obviously not Asians. The woman's skin was light brown, like toasted bread. It had taken a frustrating 3 days merely to bring these people into the same small conference room with him. Despite all of Urbane's promptings and importunings, Eberle had delayed this meeting unconscionably in Urbane's view. "I'm sorry it's taken so long to bring this conference together," Eberle said by way of opening the meeting. "Getting these three very busy people into the same place at the same time isn't easy, I assure you." "So it would seem," Urbane replied stiffly. Turning to his department heads, Eberle explained, "Dr. Urbane needs materials and manpower to build new satellite platforms. 12 of them, I believe." 12, Urbane confirmed. "At least 12. The need is quite urgent." "How many technical people will you need?" asked the Director of Human Resources. She had been introduced to Urbane as Holly Lane. Urbane picked up his handheld computer and projected his list of requirements onto the blank wall at the head of the conference room. The department heads turned to scan the list. Eberle had to swivel his chair completely around. "Good," Urbane thought. "Make him do a little work." The head of the logistics department shook his head worriedly. "That's a lot of electronics equipment you're going to need. It'll cut into our spares inventory pretty damn deep." "Yes, but..." "And I can't just pull people off their existing tasks," said the manufacturing chief. "Do you have any idea how thin we're stretched as it is? Why, I've got requisitions for jobs going into the next 6 months. Just rebuilding those damn solar panel actuators is taking up more than half my resources." And so it went for some 45 minutes, the department heads complaining that it would be impossible for them to meet Urbane's needs for at least several months. Urbane sat in growing impatience, trying to keep from exploding, knowing that he needed the support of these blundering oafs. And if he told them what he truly thought of them and their attitudes, he would never get the help he so desperately needed. Only the personnel chief, this young Lane woman, seemed at all helpful. "We could shift a few technicians temporarily," she offered, "and maybe offer overtime pay for those who'd be willing to do the assembly work after their regular shifts." But without the materials and electronics equipment, Urbane knew, the technicians would have nothing to assemble. "I must insist," he said, forcing his voice to remain calm, trembling only slightly, "that this work be given the highest possible priority. The success of this community's very raison d'etre depends on it." They cleared their throats and shifted uneasily on their chairs. They gave excuses. They waved their hands. It was only after nearly an hour of fruitless wrangling that Urbane realized that the department heads did not look at him when they spoke. They looked at Eberle. "He holds the strings," Urbane finally understood. "They will procrastinate and evade the issue until he tells them to do as I wish." Suddenly he shot to his feet. "Bah! This pointless bickering is stupid. If you will not help me, I will proceed without you." "Now wait a moment," Eberle pushed his chair back from the conference table, but did not stand up. "I have waited long enough," Urbane snapped. "I will launch our existing satellites into orbit around Titan. That will leave us with nothing in reserve, no satellite platforms in storage. If some need for further satellites arises, then you will understand how stupidly you have behaved." With that, he stormed out of the conference room.
Eberle made a rueful smile. "Emotional, isn't he?" The other two men got up from their chairs and, after a few words of conversation with Eberle, headed back to their own offices. Holly got up too, but lingered at the conference room's door. "Can you really get a team together for Urbane?" Eberle asked her. Sure, no problem.